Welcome, everyone. I will call this Committee on Senate Finance and Revenue to order today. And will the clerk please call the roll? And answer if you're participating by video or by phone.
Senator Finley?
Senator Finley by video.
Senator Riley?
Present by video.
Senator Wagner?
Present by video.
Vice Chair Boquist? Chair Burdick?
Present by video. Okay, I'll just warn everyone who's in the waiting room and the public that we are in early days of this new technological adventure we're on with this session. So we will try our best to replicate as best we can the circumstances that would exist if you were all here in person. There are a few tweaks along the way, but I'll try to be transparent about those as they come up. So we will start by opening an informational meeting on the taxation of interstate broadcasters from the Legislative Revenue Office. Chris?
Madam Chair, Kate Harger from the office has a presentation to go through. I think we also have a report from 2019 Legislative Revenue Office report on the topic. But Kate is going to, I believe, share her screen and walk through a PowerPoint presentation to provide an overview slash orientation.
Okay. Welcome, Kate.
Thank you, Chair. I am in the process of sharing my screen now. We're trying to. Are you able to see the full slides?
We can, if you could just identify yourself for the record.
Sure, thank you. So for the record, I am Caitlin Harger with the Legislative Revenue Office, and today I will present kind of some background on the way that Oregon has taxed interstate broadcasters in the past, and then I'll end the presentation with a discussion of the bill, Senate Bill 136, that the public hearing is going to be about. So first, I want to go through a brief review of some terms that are relevant for corporate taxation that you might not have thought of or thought about recently. The first is nexus. A nexus determines whether a state is able to tax a business based on their connection to that state. So in general, if a corporation has established nexus, then the state can tax that corporation and vice versa if no nexus is present. The second key term that's relevant for this discussion is apportionment. And what this does is it determines what percentage of federal income a state can tax. So there are different methods of apportioning federal income to states. Broadcasters, especially within Oregon, have used some specific methods, which I'll discuss later. But in general, apportionment is thought of as how do we take federal income and apportion that out to the states or arrange it upon states in a fair way. Oregon's current general apportionment method is what's called a single sales factor calculation. I have put the calculation as the bottom bullet point here, but the idea is you take your federal taxable income, or a corporation would take their federal taxable income and multiply it by the ratio of Oregon sales to U.S. sales, and that would get towards Oregon taxable income, so the portion of federal income that Oregon can tax. I have Oregon sales written in bold here because the focus of this policy debate over time, especially now, is tied to how do we take federal sales of broadcasters and apportion them to Oregon. So all of the methods that I'm going to discuss later in the presentation, the really key part here is how are these Oregon sales apportioned? How do we determine which sales are Oregon sales? So that's a general corporate term sheet that you'll need for this presentation. Now I'm going to be a little bit more specific in talking about broadcasters in two ways. So the first way is what exactly is an interstate broadcaster? Which companies are engaged in broadcasting? Things like that. And Oregon's statutory definition, which I've put on the left-hand portion of this slide, says that broadcasting, or someone engaged in broadcasting, is transmitting a one-way electronic signal by a conduit of communication. And so one thing that we discuss in the LRO report that was published, I believe, in late 2019, is that this is very broad today. So this definition was actually established back in 1989 during that legislative session. And you can think back to what technology looked like then as compared to now and see how the breadth of this definition has kind of changed as a function of the market. So broadcasting means anyone that is transmitting a one-way electronic signal. That's Oregon statute currently. And then the second side of this slide deals with which income is apportioned to Oregon. So if we think of a national broadcaster, one example that I know has come up in past testimony over the years is Disney. So if you think about the Disney Channel and things that they are producing, as well as the theme parks they have, which I know, this has come up in previous testimony, so a lot of you may have heard this example. The central question on the right-hand side of the slide is, do we just apportion the viewing audience portion of their income to Oregon using this method, or is all of their income subject to apportionment using this method? And there's one case, court case, that was very important in kind of the progress of these policy changes, which was the Comcast case. And the result of that said that based on Oregon's statutory definition, all income of a broadcaster, except for tangible personal property and real property, was subject to the broadcaster apportionment method. And so this potentially led to a situation where Disney, all of their money that wasn't tangible personal property or real property, could be apportioned to Oregon using the audience factor, or this method of apportionment that I'll discuss on the next slide. So I just wanted to highlight those two issues that are kind of at the central to the development of this discussion over time. And now I'll talk a little bit about how the industry is set up, or at least how LRO is conceptualizing it. So we can think of, or the way that LRO views this is three different buckets of production. So these are the three blue squares at the top. The first is content production. So which companies are actually making, viewing, or listening content for consumers? The second is the distribution of that content. And then the third is the end user. And the end user would be anytime that you are watching TV or listening to a podcast, for example, or consuming content that someone has created. So moving for a second back to the first column under content production, typically in today's market, we see three broad categories. There are national networks, and these traditionally are networks like ABC, NBC, CBS, and Fox. And then we have cable networks. And cable networks are the other channels that you might watch when you have a cable subscription. So traditionally, these are things like the Cartoon Network or Comedy Central or the Disney Channel or the Weather Channel. So we have national networks and cable networks. And then, of course, the last box that we see under this column is consumer direct content production. And this is becoming more and more common as technology evolves. One way to think of that consumer direct is something like a Netflix original. So I think Stranger Things is a Netflix original that comes to mind as I'm describing this. But the idea is that a company produces that content and they want to be able to distribute it directly to their end user. So three categories of content production. The second column here is distribution. So how is that content moving to consumers throughout this process? And typically it's been through either cable subscriptions, so something like Comcast, satellite distribution, so something like Dish or DirecTV, and then telecom, which I believe is AT&T has a telecom service. So those are the way that these are distributed. And then additionally, now we're seeing more and more content and advertisements distributed via the internet. So this is something like streaming Disney Plus on your TV. You're using the internet as a distribution method between the consumer and the producer of that content. And then finally, we see the end users. So again, these are the consumers of the content watching what has been distributed. And the revenue streams that are important here are shown in the chart, but national networks are producing content and national ads. They are then licensing that content to these distribution methods. and those ads to these distribution methods. Those distribution methods can also create content and local ads and distribute that into viewers. So if you think about if you have cable watching TV, if you're watching like NBC one night, you might see both national and local commercials. And this is kind of how that distribution channel comes about. And then, of course, viewers send either subscription fees or like a cable contract fee to the distributors, and distributors send licensing fees to the creators. So this is here for your reference. I realize this is a lot of information in one chart, but it does, I think, represent almost every interaction that we see generally in this industry. Okay, so now I'm going to go through a brief policy history. I mentioned that the broadcaster definition, or I'm sorry, the definition of broadcasting dated back to 1989. And that was the first time that Oregon had statutes specific to this industry regarding apportionment. So from 1989 until 2013, Oregon used what is called the audience method of apportionment that says, okay, if we look at your federal sales, the portion of those sales that Oregon can tax or should tax under this method is the ratio of your Oregon audience to your national audience. So let's say Oregon viewers are 1% of your national viewership, then in theory under this method, 1% of your federal taxable income would be your taxable income in Oregon. Now, in 2013, a policy change was made that went into effect in 2014, which I'll talk about in a second. But I want to give just a very brief background of each perspective prior to that change. And this description of perspectives is based on lots of conversations that LRO had with both the Department of Revenue and stakeholders over the 2019 interim while working on this report. So I believe the Motion Picture Association, which was at the time the Motion Picture Association of America, did not believe that they had nexus, or at least had differences in agreement with the Department of Revenue as to whether or not nexus existed. And there are a number of court cases that came out about tying to that issue. So from the MPA's perspective, their initial tax liability was somewhere, or is shown by this flat part of the dotted green line. So they believed that switching to the second method would actually be an increase in their tax liability, because from their perspective, nexus wasn't established in this case. Okay, and then from the department's perspective in 2013, they believed that these companies did have nexus and their tax liability was significantly higher, which is shown by the flat dotted blue line, and that switching to this new policy would result in a decline in revenue. So the point I want to make here is that during the audience method, there was a lot of disagreement between both parties about tax liability, and there were different perspectives on each side. And as a result, a number of court cases came about. And I mentioned the court cases just to highlight that the disagreement was complex enough that it was taken to that level. So then in 2014 until 2019, there was a temporary provision or a series of temporary provisions that switched Oregon to the commercial domicile method of apportionment. So whereas before it was the ratio of Oregon audience to total audience, or sorry, U.S. audience, now under commercial domicile, it would be your Oregon income would be apportioned if the direct customer of the distributor or network was located in Oregon. So for example, let's say that I own a national network and I created a television show and I license it to distributor A. If distributor A has a headquarters anywhere outside of Oregon, then that sale would not be apportioned to Oregon. And I'm generalizing here for the sake of this conversation. But the idea of commercial domicile was wherever the resident or the company is headquartered or located, that's where the sale would be attributed to. And so these two perspectives kind of come together for this portion of the policy history. And as a result, there were a number of study bills that LRO was tasked with doing. And after a number of years, there was enough evidence gained, although I can't provide a lot of detail due to disclosure issues. But the result of our report in 2019 was that it looked like, based on the court cases and the way that the market had progressed, that switching to commercial domicile from the audience method was about a $10 million average annual decline in revenue. So that was one of the results of our report. And where we are now is that, so this bill that I'll be discussing shortly, Senate Bill 136, was Senate Bill 1529A in the 2020 session. It passed the Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue and the Senate floor before session ended, so it did not go through the House side. And in the absence of any legislation, the temporary provisions that we saw under commercial domicile were no longer in effect. So now we're back to the audience method that we had before 2014. And now, based on testimony in the 2020 session, I do not believe that industry is contesting nexus. So I think industry and DOR are, I would say, in agreement, although they're going to testify so they can correct me, that nexus does exist here. So now we're at this place where the audience method is in effect and both parties do not contest nexus. So I went through the broadcasting definition earlier. I won't repeat that. I think the one thing I want to highlight for the committee here is that the market today or today's environment for these corporations is much, much different than when that definition was established. So just something to be aware of, that as things develop, that definition might be outdated or might not serve the policy intent of the committee. And the focus of this ongoing industry change that I think is highlighting a lot of these, a lot of the taxation issues within the industry is this move to consumer direct production. And sorry, let me go back for a second. One example of why it's difficult for industry to determine their tax liability under this consumer direct method is because often networks are licensing to things like Netflix or Hulu. So I'll give a general hypothetical example. Let's say that, and I know, I'll give a general hypothetical example that Melissa can correct because I think there's one tiny detail I won't get into. But let's say there's a show like Frasier or Law & Order SVU or a show that ran previously and now is on Netflix. And Netflix knows the location of their customer. So I subscribe to Netflix. They know my home address. That's my billing address. However, the licensor that's providing content to Netflix does not know my location because Netflix considers that proprietary. So in these situations, it's difficult for the actual content producer or the licensor to provide that information to DOR in order to measure their audience. And this is kind of where this topic gets really intertwined with all of the different ways that companies can be connected. So it can be very complex, and I think that's where the issues have started to come from. So current law is the audience method, which means our baseline for comparing any revenue is any revenue changes is that the audience method will be administered in the absence of legislation. And the policy that's being proposed, again, this was this passed the Senate committee and the Senate floor in 2020. It changes the apportionment method for some receipts, and I've italicized some there as the focus. The goal is to deal with the situation I just described, where a licensor might be going through a distributor who does not provide them information on where their audience is based. There's also changes to the sales to which the apportionment method applies. So very beginning of the presentation, I mentioned that the Comcast case said, okay, all of your income will be apportioned this way. There's a change in the bill that says only your income from broadcasting will be apportioned this way. But if you would prefer all of your income to be apportioned the way it was previously, you can elect to do that as well. So those are the three main policy changes that are present in what is currently Senate Bill 136. And I've thrown in the presentation a description of this section by section. Section 2 is where the focus of these policy changes shows up. It defines broadcasting and total gross receipts. It describes apportionment options for broadcasters, including in the situation of the licensing that I described, but also relating to that initial Comcast case. and it's applicable to tax years beginning on or after January 1, 2020. So I want to highlight that for the committee, which would mean that even though there was an absence in legislation during the 2020 session, this would be retroactive for that tax year. And I think in an effort to conserve some time, I think I've gone through most of this. I'm just going to jump to the bottom bullet point here. So what does the bill actually do in the case of those licensing contracts where the content creator does not have full information on the end user? So as part of an agreement between the Department of Revenue and industry during that last session, there is a 0.6% value that's used in the numerator of the apportionment ratio only in those specific sales cases, and that's multiplied by their total U.S. sales. Then the audience method can be used for other broadcasting sales, and they do still have that election to apply the audience method to all of their sales. So that's kind of a quick summary of what's been going on with that bill. To kind of show this visually, this is the same chart I presented before, but all the way to the right, you can see that Senate Bill 136, which is the bill we're talking about later in the hearing, shows a slight revenue decline relative to the audience. And I put the a chart that I presented last session for an estimated revenue impact when this bill passed the Senate, and it's about a $0.6 million decline, and it has to do with the change in the application of apportionment to which portions of sale. Let me start over. The first portion has to do with, okay, which sales of mine are being apportioned by this method? And then if you look at the last row in the chart, this is dealing with that specific licensing situation I described earlier and the 0.6% as the policy here. And so that's all the information I had to present to you. I can expand on details about the bill if that would help. I'm also available, of course, to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you for that excellent presentation, Caitlin. Are there questions from the committee? There's a raised hand icon, and Senator Boquist, you can just barge right in. I think that's the best way, by phone. So are there questions from the committee? Okay, I see no questions. Committee members, I'll remind you when you're not speaking to please keep your mute button on so we don't hear background noises. I certainly have a lot of them in my house since I've got construction going on. Luckily, we have a respite now. So thank you very much for that presentation, Kate. That was very helpful. So I will close the informational hearing, informational meeting on taxation of interstate broadcasters, and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 136. Chris.
Madam Chair, and Kate, I think went through a description of the bill. So I think you're probably ready to call up your panel.
Okay, I just didn't want to short you if you had something to add.
Nope, that's good.
Okay, we will, and now this is going to be a little bit different than we normally do. We're going to call our first panel, which is John Powell and Melissa Patak. She'll tell us what it is. And for the panels in this technological era we're in, when you enter the room, each please introduce yourselves so that your picture will be up there. And then when it's your turn to testify, introduce yourself again before you give your testimony. So John and Melissa.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Am I coming through?
Yes, you are. So introduce yourself and then Melissa can introduce herself.
Okay, I am John Powell. My client in this case is the Motion Picture Association.
Great, thank you. My name is Melissa Patak. Chairman Burdick, you got it just right. I am Vice President and Senior Counsel for State Government Affairs with the Motion Picture Association.
Excellent, okay. Proceed with your testimony, whatever order you've decided.
Madam Chair, this is Chris. Are video screens on for John and Melissa?
I can see both on my.
I don't see a video for John. Do you have your video turned on, John?
Let's see.
I see John.
Yeah, my video's on. I see myself and I see Melissa.
Well, I see you now, John. You did something. So, Melissa, please do the same thing.
Okay.
Wave. Just move.
There might just be a lag.
Yeah, I think so.
Right. Can you see me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Melissa, why don't you go ahead? All I would say is Kate did a very good job describing a torturous avenue to get to this point. And she and Chris did probably the best staff work I have ever witnessed on an issue of complexity like this, starting with very little understanding and other than watching television, and understanding this issue faster than I picked up on it for sure, and are able to articulate the major provisions. So we really appreciate that. So Melissa, why don't you go ahead with your testimony?
Great. Thank you, John. Good afternoon, Chairwoman Burdick, Vice Chair Boquist, members of the committee. My name is Melissa Patak. As I said, I'm Vice President and Senior Counsel for State Government Affairs for the Motion Picture Association. I'm here on behalf of MPA and our member companies, who are the owners of most of the major television broadcast networks and most of the national cable program networks currently operating in the United States. Just to go through so you know who our members are, Disney, Netflix, Paramount Pictures, Sony Pictures, Universal, which is NBC Universal, and Warner Brothers Entertainment. We are here to support SB 136, which provides an appropriate apportionment for network and cable program broadcasters. This bill represents a compromise that the staff of the Legislative Revenue Office advanced in last year's legislative session. SB 136 provides that for a taxpayer who is a broadcaster, its market for sales is in Oregon if its subscribers or audience is in Oregon. The bill states that the taxpayer's sales factor, quote, shall be determined, unquote, using third-party ratings information as well as information from the taxpayer's books and records. This is an important provision because too often the DOR has relied on population and has been unwilling to consider the information provided by the taxpayer that establishes the broadcaster's actual audience. The bill also provides for a floor or a minimum if there is insufficient information to determine audience or subscribers. The broadcaster will use 0.6% multiplied by the broadcaster's receipts from licensing and advertising in the U.S. to subscription services as the numerator of the sales factor. As part of this compromise, the bill includes a provision allowing a platform broadcasting company to elect audience as the apportionment method. A platform broadcasting company includes a cable service provider, a direct broadcast satellite service, and or a multi-channel video programming distributor. The election would be effective for 5 years. In providing for this election for broadcasters commonly owned with a cable service provider, a direct broadcast satellite provider, or a multi-channel video programming service provider, the bill addresses the changes that have occurred in the broadcast industry, from business mergers to the development of new streaming services. The bill retains audience as the apportionment method for those companies with various business units that are commonly owned in order to streamline the determination of their tax liability in Oregon. The bill modernizes the definition of broadcaster and provides a definition for platform broadcasting company, which reflects business operations and is intended to address controversies that have arisen under the existing law. We believe this legislation will provide consistency and clarity both for the taxpayer and the state, and we urge your support for SB 136. Thank you very much for holding this hearing and the opportunity to testify. I'm happy to try to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Are there questions from the committee? I don't see any questions. I just wanted to say how grateful I am for all the work you've put in on this, and I hope this is the last we see this for a while. This has been going on since my last tenure as committee chair of this committee, which is a good over five years ago. So I really appreciate the effort that's gone into this.
In some way, Chairman Burdick, it's fitting. You were here at the beginning, and now you will see it through to the finish line. So we appreciate that.
Yes, and I got to miss a lot of the gory details.
Yes, exactly. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, now we'll call our next panel, Marjorie Taylor and Joe Royston from the Department of Revenue. And would you please introduce yourself before you start your panel and then again before you speak?
I'm Marjorie Taylor from the Department of Revenue.
And this is Joe Royston with the Department of Revenue.
Good, we see pictures of both of you, so please proceed, thank you.
Great. Chair Burdick, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Marjorie Taylor, the Legislative Director at the Department of Revenue. As you heard from Kate, the policy discussion around Senate Bill 136 is lengthy and complex. And so today I have with me Joe Royston, who will be able to comment on our understanding of Senate Bill 136 as it's currently drafted.
Thank you. Welcome, Mr. Royston.
Thank you, Chair Burdick and members of the committee. For the record, I am Joseph Royston, manager of the Corporation and Estate section of the Department of Revenue. Our program staff have evaluated Senate Bill 136 and determined it is identical to Senate Bill 1529 considered last year. At this time, we see that the bill proposes to change how sales of broadcasters are apportioned in several ways, which Caitlin has done a great job of outlining for us today. However, we are continuing to evaluate provisions of the measure and how they may reflect the conversations from 2020. So I wanted to take this opportunity to make it clear that the agency is certainly able to implement Senate Bill 136 that is currently drafted.
Thank you. I didn't mean to interrupt. Are you finished?
Yes, indeed. Thanks for the time.
And thank you for that kumbaya moment. Are there questions from the committee? All right, I want to reiterate to you all as well that how much I appreciate the work the department has put into this bill, and grateful that we can put this behind us with a very reasonable compromise. So are there any questions from the committee? Last call. Okay, thank you. We will not work this bill today because our leadership has asked us to hold off on work sessions the same day because the technological aspect of this has caused, has caused the public some kind of, it's harder for the public to respond quickly in the circumstances we're in. So we will hold off on a work session today, but again, I appreciate all the work that everyone's put into this bill. So I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 136 and open a work session for possible bill introduction. Chris, do we have any bills?
Madam Chair, we do not have any bills today.
Okay, we will close the work session, and we have no further items on our agenda. So are there any other?
Madam Chair.
Senator Boquist, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the sake of the public, and I pinged you and Chris, also back in 2020, when the committee passed out 1529, I think that's the correct bill number, is it not, Chris?
It is.
For whatever reason on the measure tracking, it says it never got to the floor of the Senate. So we should probably ask LRO, Chris and his staff to go back and make corrections to the 2020 so that it shows the Senate vote that it did pass our chamber once before. Thank you, ma'am.
Appreciate that. Chris, I assume you can take care of that?
Yes, Madam Chair, I will look into it.
Okay. Thank you, and that completes the work of our committee today, and thank you all for your technological prowess in this committee, and we are adjourned.
Thank you.